So I'm guessing CS is probably going to eventually get sick of me responding to his videos. But a few weeks ago, he made a video titled Meet Mark, where he describes a fictitious New Yorker named Mark and does a little maths to explore Mark's odds of A, meeting a good woman, and B, living happily ever after with her. Now, in that video, which I highly suggest you all go and check out, he uses a modified version of the Drake equation to determine Mark's odds of finding his perfect mate. However, Clive makes a minor mistake. He states based on stats compiled by OkCupid that Mark's attractiveness level to the opposite sex will be 20% or 0.2. Now, I should point out that this mistake really doesn't radically change the outcome of Clive's formula, but it does open up an interesting avenue to explore how the generalized statistics we have on male-female attraction can actually provide some insights into the everyday lives of individuals like you and I. To start with, I think we should take a quick look at the data. This is the OkCupid research blog post that often gets cited, and I believe is the data that Clive was referring to. Quote, "Our chart shows how men have rated women on a scale from 0 to 5. The curve is symmetric and surprisingly charitable. A woman is as likely to be considered extremely ugly as extremely beautiful, and the majority of women have been rated about medium. The chart looks normalized, even though it is just the unfiltered opinion of our male users," end quote. Now, essentially what this is saying is that the so-called male appraisals of female attractiveness, that is, the raw opinions of males towards the opposite sex on OkCupid, are fairly well balanced. Even by mathematical standards, the mean and median both seem to sit around 50%, with a fairly wide standard deviation. The male user base of OkCupid seem to have a fairly reasonable perspective of the opposite sex. However, as we get further into the article, specifically the section where the female user base is assessed in the same way, we see some very, very different things. Quote, "As you can see from the grey line, women rate an incredible 80% of guys as worse looking than medium. Very harsh," end quote. Now, this data from OkCupid is corroborated by other sources. Tinder, for example, also shows a very clear gender differential, with women swiping right only 15% of the time versus men swiping right 47% of the time. I actually find this fact particularly interesting, that on a platform like Tinder, which rates and judges individuals purely on the basis of looks, we see such a wide gender disparity in male versus female appraisal of attractiveness. Given that we're constantly told that women are the ones who have to live up to an unrealistic standard of beauty. But the inability of feminists to review real-world data in the face of their facile ideology is really a discussion for another video. The mistake that Clive made is that you can't just take someone at random and apply these kind of generalized statistics to them. The fact that women on OkCupid considered a massive 80% of men below average doesn't necessarily mean that only 20% of the female population will find Mark attractive. On the contrary, in Mark's case, if we consider that hypergamy, specifically the provision of resources, is probably the driving factor behind female reproductive choices, and I'm talking serious long-term relationship investment here, not a drunken hookup with some chiseled guy at the club, the fact that Mark earns $65,000 a year would actually put him in the top 10% of earning Americans, earning well above average and over two times the American median wage. It's entirely likely that the majority of women would actually find Mark to be a rather attractive suitor. What really matters is whether a specific individual like Mark falls above or below the attraction threshold. In the case of men, based on the statistics available from OkCupid and Tinder, that threshold seems to sit around the 80 to 85th percentile. If Mark is above that threshold in the top 10% of, quote, eligible men, then most women would find him attractive, and below that line, most women would find him unattractive. without getting too bogged down in the mathematics and computer science behind the concept, what we end up with is essentially a transfer function, or S-curve. These are very important in machine learning systems for determining the likelihood that a specific piece of input data has crossed a certain learned threshold. In this case, the input data is the man's relative population ranking, and the output is the likelihood that women will find him attractive. So, assuming that Mark is in the 90th percentile, women would find him very attractive. But as he approaches and crosses that attraction threshold into undesirability, his perceived sexual and social market value starts to plummet in the eyes of women. Now, another way of thinking about S-curves is that they actually show us very similar data to bell curves, but rather than showing us the data grouped as a normalized distribution, the S-curve instead shows us the same data as a cumulative measurement. One way of thinking about it would be that the bell curve shows us the speed of an object moving along a path, whereas the S-curve shows us the same object's absolute position along that path. So what we really have here is a curve showing the absolute attractiveness of an individual man, given which population percentile he falls in. Now, bear with me, there is a very useful reason for displaying the data this way. You see, the same transfer function applies to women too. Just because men swipe right 50% of the time on Tinder doesn't mean that 50% of all men will find any given woman attractive. The overwhelming majority of men are still going to find a fat, ugly woman unattractive, and that same overwhelming majority of men would unanimously drool over a Victoria's Secret model, with some debate and opinion to be had about whether you find a particular woman in the middle personally attractive or not. What matters is whether she falls above or below the female attraction threshold. The defining difference is that on aggregate, the dating standards of men and thus the attraction threshold for women is much more reasonable. When we draw the transfer function for women on the same graph, with their attraction threshold being at about 50%, a massive 30 percentiles lower than men, we start to see some very interesting things happen that we might have missed by simply overlaying two run-of-the-mill bell curves. Based on this, there is a very clear distinction in how both men and women rate themselves and how they rate each other. And there are some very obvious social implications that are going to stem from this significant attraction differential. The most obvious being that more than the top 20% of the population are going to marry. A good portion of the people on this graph are going to end up in committed relationships, legal marriage, cohabitation, or just long-term monogamous dating. In fact, according to Gallup, 56% of people aged 30 to 39 are currently legally married, with a further 13% currently living as non-married cohabitating couples. Taking into account the different age demographics, as well as divorces and remarriages, a study by the CDC has found that by age 40, over 80% of all Americans will have been in at least a first marriage. Fact: at some point in their lives, the vast majority of these women will at least attempt to settle into some kind of long-term relationship with one of the men available to her. The OkCupid post itself states, quote, "But with the basic ratings so out of whack, the two curves together suggest some strange possibilities for the female thought process, the most salient of which is that the average-looking woman has convinced herself that the vast majority of males aren't good enough for her, but she then goes right out and messages them anyway," end quote. The problem that should be immediately clear is that there is going to be an extremely large difference of perceived social value in all of these relationships. In other words, even as she's sending the very first OkCupid message, hypergamy is already a major factor in this relationship. In her head, she's settling for someone that she thinks is far below her social and sexual market value. This, I think, is the genesis of all of these ideas about man drought and where have all the good men gone. They're still there, and frankly, they're perfectly good guys. But it isn't about raw numbers of single men. It's about perceived eligibility in the eyes of women. attractiveness and raw population statistics just don't seem to neatly correlate in the female mind, resulting in a huge deficit between the median and mean attractiveness they perceive in men. You see, even though two people may exist in the exact same percentile on this population graph ranking relative attractiveness, in her mind, she sees herself as an 8 dating a 3. To her, it's a bad reproductive investment, but due to market pressures, i.e. she doesn't want to be lonely or she wants to start a family, these are the only men available in her relative population percentile, so she goes ahead and makes the relationship investment anyway. Over time, this perception that she's invested in worthless relationship stock, somebody who's fundamentally not good enough for her, will only lead to discontent and eventual divorce. This shaded section of the graph is what I would refer to as the divorce zone. It's this section of the graph that shows, I think in very clear terms, why 70% of all divorces are initiated by women. Interestingly, this graph also seems to roughly correlate to the proportions of the bar graph that I created in my last video, Non-Trivial Percentage, showing 40 to 50% of marriages ending in divorce, the 13% of marriages that could be called satisfying, and the large unaccounted-for segment of presumably unhappy cheaper-to-keeper marriages. This is why I mentioned in my Innate Incentives video that divorce is just such a back-the-front way of looking at our societal problems. Everyone, MRAs and anti-feminists in particular, are so singularly focused on the point at which these long-term relationships legally fall apart that they fail to notice the glaringly obvious. These relationships were flawed from the very beginning. Regardless of whether or not the female thought process is reasonable, the fact is that from the very start of the relationship, the very first OK Cupid message exchange, women on aggregate think they're being forced by social and sexual market pressures to settle for a rather raw reproductive deal. The ultimate result of which you're looking at here is the entire problem with this bullshit rationalization from traditionalists that it's all your fault because you just didn't pick the right woman. You see, if you're one of the vast majority of average people situated in the center of this graph, it literally doesn't matter who the fuck you choose as a partner because there is such a clear and fundamental psychological disparity between how men and women see themselves, how they value each other, and what they expect from a relationship. So what does all this mean? At its core, this video is really just a single piece of a much larger biological jigsaw puzzle. And if we care to look at some of those other jigsaw pieces, we see these same online dating statistics embedded in our very DNA and mirrored in the mating practices of our closest living primate relatives. Not to go flogging a dead horse here, but women are not, as Sargon puts it, legally incentivized to divorce. It's not because of Karl Marx, and it's certainly not because all of womankind were brainwashed in the space of two decades by idiots like Germaine Greer and Gloria Steinem writing a few books. This is about biology and innate sexually dimorphic psychology.